everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you. Off we go on this Friday. And Tom Fairbanks, my buddy, engineering and producing the show. Tom, we've got the covers off the plants. This morning,
you brave,
they were going,
soul, you.
Oh, is that you, Bill? Oh, maybe we can breathe, 7 to 10 days of being covered. Still waiting to see from the National Weather Service if it's a record. I kind of think it is the most consecutive.
And the record you're talking about is the
most consecutive day mornings of 32 degrees or below.
There you go.
I've been in town 35 years. Jan Lesher is with me, Pima County Administrator. Jan, can you ever remember a spell like this?
Bill, I can't, and it's my hometown. I was born here a little more than 30-some years ago, and we'll leave it at that, but I do not recall.
Yeah. So we'll have a few days break, and then it's going to get cool again. I mean, it's been a very late autumn was cool, and the winter has been as well. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It is Friday, January 27th, 2023, our final Friday of the month in January. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. We are, January is our 13th year. Getting the 13th year started with the radio show, and year number 35 since I blew into town Christmas Eve on 1987. And that, Jan, again, you remember that was a big snowfall.
That was the snow, that's right.
That was the snow. Yeah. So that was me driving back into town. Had been here in the 60s to go to school, but I'm going, whoa, Tucson has really changed as far as... It's all snowy.
That winter was, it was snow, and the Cats were number one in the country for the first
That's
time
right.
in the basketball team.
Oh, my goodness.
It was big times.
Yeah. We have our worldwide live listening and our podcasts at buckmastershow.com, our Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040. It's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners. We like to do a big shout out to all of them, the folks that support us with a live link over to the Buckmaster Show website, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith and his team, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. That's Dan Scheer, who is with us in studio. Dan, thanks for your support all these years.
Yep, you always have it.
Well, and it wasn't just on the radio show. It was, I think we did probably your first TV appearance on our Friday roundtable. Might have been in the early 90s, maybe, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, not that long ago. No.
Anyway, Tucson. Thanks also to Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio publications, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. I've already mentioned with us in studio for her return appearance. I think Jan was with us in November. Did you have a nice holiday season?
I did. Lots of wonderful time with family and friends. So
yeah, a little bit
downtime,
mm-hmm. and the new year is off to a running start. Jim, I was going to say also that I was thinking about Dan Scheer. Nitzel was with us for so many years, too, on our Friday roundtable. But yes. Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, and also editorial director, the WIC Communications, based in Sierra Vista, now has expanded some more. I used to say 24 newspapers in 13 states. I guess you're over 30 now?
We're at right about 30 in 13 states, yes.
Any more in the Dakotas?
I try not to talk to them in the winter because they keep sending me there.
Can you come up here? We've got another problem.
Just tell me everything's okay.
We've got all heck breaking loose here at the State House in Pierre.
Yeah.
Well, you told me not to say Pierre. It's Pierre.
Pierre. Correct you.
Yeah. All right. Jan Lesher, here we are. February coming up. What are you going over the numbers for the new budget? I'm sure you are.
That's really where we are, Bill. A lot of it is starting to put together the budgets. The departments have started to submit their budgets. And it really is a very different system for us this year. We, I think as we've talked about in the past, the budget would get distributed by the county administrator the end of April, meet in May, have a hearing and adopt it tentatively the next month. We began having hearings with the board last year to get some direction a little bit about what the board wanted to see in that budget so that we weren't presenting a budget that they'd never seen before or had input into. It's their budget. And then be trying to craft from there. So we changed the timing a little bit, moved some things so that we got more public input and board direction up front about what we want to do, keep trying to keep the taxes flat, see where we're going. And I think one of the great challenges for us going into the next year is we are coming off the huge influx of federal dollars related to the pandemic and to COVID. And in 1 year, the Pima County budget went from just a little over $1 billion to over $2 billion. And those dollars have been coming in primarily for the public health response for the pandemic. But with any organization, excuse me, we doubled in size in terms of the budget. And now those dollars are going away. And how do we begin to make sure that we're now right-sized as a county and making sure that we're responding to community needs as those dollars wane?
I didn't realize, Jan Lesher, that your budget actually, with that influx of federal money, and it wasn't just Pima County, it was pretty much every state had it, every municipality, every county government got money from the feds. I didn't realize that it really ballooned over $2 billion.
Over $2
billion. So now it's right-sizing without that, pretty much without that money.
That's correct.
For the package year that will be 23-24.
Correct. With big chunks of that money really in two areas, primarily one obviously in the health department, as I mentioned, as we continue providing vaccine, but it allowed for an expanded public health role, really. So we're out not only giving dealing with the pandemic, but this last few months dealing with flu, respiratory issues, pneumonia, et cetera. But in other areas, there were significant dollars available for emergency rental relief. And so that the individuals who might be struggling during the pandemic, if, say, they'd lost a job, didn't have the income, and then were in a pinch of where to live in the middle of the pandemic, federal dollars were made available to keep those people in their homes and to provide that emergency rental assistance. Those dollars we think will probably last through maybe March into April. So it's not only winding down those programs, the staff that managed all those programs, and then working with the members of the public who maybe who had received benefit from the program and making sure they're prepared for that transition off the availability of those dollars.
We've lost Dr. Cullen. I think she's just terrific. She's been so transparent. It's Dr. Francisco Garcia, and then it was Dr. Cullen, the two of them, a great team. But Dr. Cullen is now gone up to Phoenix to be the state health director. I was talking to Will Humble yesterday on the show, and Will's the former state health director, and he was saying that has to go before the state legislature. They have to prove it. The Senate has to sign off on it. But there is a one-year grace period that she will be in there.
Well, she can be appointed by the governor and serve for a year as an interim. If it is not approved by the Senate. Mm-hmm. But that makes it tough. She can also serve for a period of time as an acting. But I think you have to step back to if there's the concern that's happening, and I'm sure Will talked about it, is some of the legislature has really targeted Dr. Cullen.
Yes.
Because of her advocacy for vaccine.
And masks.
And masks.
Yeah.
And those are not things that were popular with part of the legislature. So she has been targeted, and there's many people who have stated publicly that they do not want her to be confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the advice, talking with her is hoping there's a path forward for her confirmation, because serving in an acting or an interim capacity for a year can be challenging as well. Anytime then she goes to the legislature for a budget or to work with the governor on those issues can be a little problematic. So we're hoping that the team working with her and having conversations with the legislature understands there's a lot more to that department and issues to which she will be speaking, for which she's eminently qualified, that go far beyond just COVID vaccine.
And just a quick follow-up before I give it to you, Dan. So who become, how does that work? Dr. Garcia still is the head of all of the health function here. But what about Dr. Cullen's position? How is that filled?
Dr. Garcia will be, if you will, right now, the interim and filling in that capacity. He is our chief medical officer for the county, and he will be then heading the process that we walk through to find the next director.
Okay, Dan Scheer.
Adelita Grijalva led her first meeting as chair this week, and she started out right before the call to the audience saying, look, here are the rules, and she kind of laid them out there, because call to the audience, which is a very important part of the meeting, which allows the public to come up and just state whatever's on their mind, has been brutal. It used to be very pointed in the past, and that's okay, but it has become brutal with name-calling and even tossing of objects and things like that. And even after she did that, it got out of hand on Tuesday. What's the thinking at the county about that? Do you just stomach it or what?
Well, that's probably the number one issue we've been chatting about, Dan, and I think it's that. How do we balance an individual's right with protected speech, and then with the fact that there's others in the audience, and there is that is the opportunity for the board of a very large corporation, if you will, to conduct its business. And what you saw happen is a meeting was recessed, the work of the county stopped for a period of time. And where is that line? You know, as you point out, I've been there years where people came to every meeting and had a lot to say, and they might have picked on a person or two with a public comment, but this has turned into a real personal attack in some areas and a very angry attack. And it's one thing to, as we were chatting, to express a concern, express a difference of opinion, and to understand that, but when it's so vocal and angry, I've watched groups of students be taken by their teachers out of the room and left because of that behavior. And then there's the unique problem that because of our need to agendize items for discussion so the public knows what a governing body is talking about, the board is very limited in what it can do to respond to a call to the public. So extraordinary allegations can hang in the air a little bit, if you will. And we're hoping that there's an opportunity for an individual to at least say, by the way, you know, I have stopped beating my wife, or whatever that might be, what that comment is. But I'll just tell you, it's the challenge, and we don't want to limit somebody's. Some bodies don't have call to the public. Some bodies limit by time. I believe the city has a 30-minute, you know, hard stop.
At the end of their meeting?
No, theirs is at the beginning. Okay. But Bill, that's it. Some people move it to the end. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little difficult, because if you're there to speak to an item that might be coming up on an agenda, moving it to the end is difficult.
Yeah, sure.
But you end up sometimes, we've had this situation where there's a call to the public, we stop it, we go into an agenda item because we've had to deal with that, go back and forth to the call to the public. But I don't know yet, Dan, where we go, because if an individual believes there's a right to speak, what we saw happen, an individual that we turned off microphones, we say you're 3 minutes up, and was not leaving the podium. And so then does somebody arrest her and cart her out? Well, no, that's really, you know, not what you want to get, but it is just the challenge we're dealing with, I guess. You know, I keep thinking about it. You know, I was raised in that world where my rights extend to the other person's nose, you know.
Right.
And how do we balance that in some way that it's not okay for students and other members of the public who are there to talk about the rezoning in their neighborhood or the need for a new jail or whatever that item may be, are waiting while we listen to people angrily yell at members of the board to shut their mouths.
So at this point, there's not going to be a change in the rules or procedures between this meeting this week and the next one?
There will not.
So there are some 30 minutes is what you said the city does.
That's my understanding.
How about other counties around the state?
We're looking at them everybody's
Maricopa
in a little different
County,
place.
Like, what do they do? Do you recall?
I don't know the limits of it. Mm-hmm. I can tell you I watched some of their board hearing mm-hmm. when they were dealing with the election
yes.
issue at the canvassing of approving the canvass. And the chair was very forceful in shutting down large vocalizations. When the group started yelling, he called them out of order, and so was really monitoring it that way. But that's we're trying to get an idea of what others do. We don't want to stop that, limit that ability of the public to speak. But how do you get them to do it in a way that protects and encourages others to speak as well?
And we should point out that there are a lot of people who go up there and handle themselves very well.
Beautiful.
And are respectful,
yep,
even though they disagree with the board.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Well, one thing everybody here agrees on, Jan, for sure. Well, I know you love Mona's Danish Bakery.
Oh,
Dan
right.
loves it's a little, Dan, whenever he's in town, if he can, he likes to get up there to Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle. That's comforting food that they serve up there. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast, and people are waiting for the doors to open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock on Sunday morning. They are taking Monday off. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. We've got lots more with Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator. Want to talk about the situation with the Pima County Jail when we come back right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator, and Dan Shear of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Ed Ackerley joins us now on the live line. Hey, Ed, how are you?
Fine, Bill. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment to Jan, if I could. Jan,
sure.
I just wanted to thank you publicly for all you and your staff have been doing to get the 80th anniversary of Rito Park Foundation's Rito Racing going. We start February 4th, and I just really appreciate what you personally have done and what your staff has done to bend over backwards to help us get that going this year. So we look forward to a fantastic season, and thank you so much.
Terrific. Thank you, Ed, and thanks to all of the members of the, you know, the Fair Horse Racing Commission and the foundation and everyone who's been involved in keeping horse racing alive at Rito for a lot of years, and we thank you.
Ed, are you still there?
Yeah.
Ed, quickly, how many, what's your season look like then this year? Starts February 4th? Yeah.
And goes to April 2nd. It'll be a total of 9 weeks, Saturdays and Sundays. Gates open at 11 and post time is at 1. We've got a new feature this year, which we're really excited about, and that is the Stride Safe safety protocol that's we've invested a lot of time, energy, and money in, and it's a way to make sure that we have the equine wellness program goes to the next step. We're doing everything we can to mitigate any tragedies or any injuries for the horses, so we're pretty excited about the 80th anniversary.
Okay, Ed, thank you for checking in.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right. Here's Dan Shear.
Pima County Jail, we've always known that it's a wreck of a building, but now you are putting together a committee to really take a close look at it. That committee could come back with anything from leave it alone to take it all down. Is that right?
And a lot in between there. That's right.
Right, exactly.
And what we are looking, what we're focused on is the board approved the creation and the first steps and the creation of a Blue Ribbon Commission. You mentioned to look at the jail. What we will be going back to the board on February 21st with a proposed charter, members of the commission, and a timeline. What we've said is, and Supervisor Christie had been concerned that, you know, the establishment of a commission is where items go to die, and I share his real concern, which is why we have real clear timelines, and we're going to hope the board holds everyone accountable. We are looking at a smaller group with three working groups, one to look at the facility itself, to get out there. What's the deferred maintenance? You know, what are those concerns? What do we need to do? Just looking at that building. We've heard a lot about a new jail. And when I think of the new jail, it really addresses the second committee, which is the programmatic side of it. New doesn't just mean, you know, new concrete. It's a new way of operating. Potentially, there are gold standards around the country of how a facility can be designed so that they're much more efficient, use less staff. There's a way to do that, and so we're looking at that. And then the third element is the financial aspect. We know that a new jail will probably be anywhere from $250 to $380 million. Many counties around the state have a jail district that is a taxing authority. Do we want to go that way? Do we go back to bonds? I believe the Sheriff Nanos has talked about a sales tax, to simply have a sales tax to fund it. So we want to make sure that when we return to the board in 180 days, we've looked at all the different elements and say, here's what needs to be done to fix it. How do we get it up to speed? Here's recommendations for how it can be operated. And again, that's a tough category there in that it is up to the sheriff to run his jail, whether it be Sheriff Dupnik or Napier or Nanos. And so we don't want to get in a position where the board is telling them how to operate the facility. But what are we going to be recommending go forward as those gold standards? And then, frankly, I think that effort may lead to another sort of longer-term evaluation, because we're hearing from a lot of folk who believe that the way to fix the jail is simply to have fewer people in it. And so that begins to look at bail and initial appearances and pretrial and any kind of deflection program or alternative to the incarceration. Whole world to look in that area, but that's not the focus for this unique, for a very short period of time at the front.
There's more money for jail, people working in the jail? Is that coming? Pay
don't,
raises? No,
that will be one of the, we just did, there was a $1.7 million increase to for correctional officers, for those individuals who are in the jail. And so we saw that. We did, the board approved that raise for those individuals. Tough job. And we're glad to give them a little more money.
And I can't help but think that Sheriff Nanos believes that a nicer facility is going to attract and keep employees there longer.
Absolutely. I think what Sheriff Nanos, I think, would tell you is that when they do exit interviews and people leave, it's not really the pay, but it's that environment, you know, and you know, what it's like there. They like it there. Well, and I'm saying, they pay is obviously very important. It's something that's critical. He's seen that pop to the top of the issue, top of the reasons why people are leaving. We're trying to help him as a county and as a board get that additional funding. But I think then it's that culture, it's that environment. That's a pretty old building, and if you've been in it, there's a lot of room for improvement.
But this is a little bit of an unfair question, mm-hmm. but I'm asking you to speculate. Would people go for a bond at this point? I mean, we're facing so much financial, just big question marks as a nation. That's a huge ask.
It's a huge ask, and I think several. Bottom line up front, answer your question, no. I don't think people would go for a bond now. But I also think part of the work of, and I think for a lot of reasons, there's financial reasons. I think the county's got some work to do to rebuild some trust. We did not have some successful bond issues in the past. How do we make sure that people feel comfortable and confident that we're using their money the way that they'd asked us to? But I do think that whatever we do, we're not going to have a new jail tomorrow. It takes some time. Could we look at the establishment? I mean, if we're going to pass bonds, for example, would a recommendation be that that's 4 years down the road? I don't know. So is it's one of the funding opportunities that I think is right for us to reevaluate. I think that's going to be a difficult situation.
Boy, there's so many issues that we need to talk about, and we're already at midway point of the program. We haven't talked about the homeless issue, the unhoused community here, and there is a census, right, Dan, that's going on right now?
Right. Went on this week. We actually sent a reporter on that as a volunteer, and mm-hmm. She's writing a first-person story. And it is, you talk about nailing Jell-O to a wall. Trying to count the homeless is simply an impossible task.
Well, and I'll tell you, in terms of how to respond to the homeless and when crime on the streets, I feel very confident telling you, Bill, that if you have me back at some point, we will not have solved the problem by then.
No,
and
no,
I can address the questions at that time, because it's everything. Every time we think we're looking at an answer, then we find out, well, but this is why that doesn't work, or this is what happens when you do that. And you're right, it's Jell-O, and it's a real whack-a-mole game in some ways. So we've got a lot of work to do in that area.
And there are some lawmakers now saying homelessness should be a crime in Arizona.
Well, then you're addressing a symptom, not really the issue. And and then, of course, there are a million different reasons people are homeless. So it's difficult.
Sorry, Dan, but part of what we've seen, frankly, I feel that there are areas in which people who are committing crimes are using homelessness as sort of the facade, if you will. We're seeing huge problems with fentanyl and property crimes and things. And there's some bad folk out there, and I think most of the community is sympathetic to some who are homeless, helping them. Look at our emergency rental programs. There's helping folks get that little Band-Aid they need to get to the next home. Passion for that, caring about that. The person who's out there, again, in the backyard of the small business or the front porch of the small business, actively involved in drug use and abuse and criminal activity, that's a different kettle of fish. And I think we're all looking at how do we deal with that problem so that the businesses can continue. Somebody that's living in a wash and has chosen to be homeless, that's not a crime. But goes back a little bit, I guess, what we said earlier, your rights extend to that other person's nose. You can live in the wash if it's not hurting anybody. You start living in the front porch of someone's business or make them afraid to come out of their home because you are conducting illegal activity or panhandling or causing an unwelcome and unpleasant environment for someone else, then we got a problem.
Isn't it interesting how these issues all kind of come together and co-mingle? Homelessness, affordable housing,
poverty,
poverty,
drugs,
jail population. I mean, there are a lot of issues that are on the plate right now in Pima County.
Absolutely right. And that's it. We're looking at, we had another item on the agenda. Doesn't seem like much, but an initial appearance, an intergovernmental agreement between the city and the county for initial appearances. And that came before the board four times at four different meetings last year, and we were not able to get a path forward. We now have one. But when you think about the number of people who come in for that initial appearance, there's a contract with the Superior Court, with the magistrates to conduct those hearings. That magistrate has a few moments in time to decide whether someone is going to be released, kept in the jail, where do they go. With that volume of individuals, we see instances in which an individual was released during that initial appearance and went on to commit a terrible crime. So how do we, are the right people conducting those initial appearances? But an element that we have put in working with the courts who are the lead in this IGA, it is their IGA, how do we help them get the data they need? Because that's really, in the final analysis, we don't know how to fix a problem unless you truly understand it, and that's the accumulation of the data that will come. So that was a big piece.
But deserved or not, Pima County has a reputation of siding with the homeless, with the people who are committing crimes, with those, and not the business owners. And again, that's probably a rap that's not fully deserved, but it's what's out there. And so how do you deal with that when it comes time to, okay, we've identified the problem, but it's going to take some money. We need you on board to vote for this or that or whatever. I mean, you're fighting a reputation here that is, it's going to be a tough one.
It's a little tough. Well, and I tell you, one of the ways that we're doing that, which also is not without controversy, is we talk regularly with the leadership of what the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. That coalition has friends and those in the community who are less supportive, if you will. And we've had it suggested to us that we need to stop listening to that group or stop meeting with them and talking to them by some, not the board. And I, you know, I'm a believer that we talk to everybody. You know, in the final analysis, the county is doing its own work plan relating to pretrial services, facilities that we would be putting at the jail, how we work with the sheriff. It's our plan. But it is as critical for me to listen to our partners at the city. And we do have an employee that works jointly for Mr. Ortega and me so that we coordinate those efforts to look at homelessness. We talk with the city all the time. We talk with representatives of the business coalition. This last week, I had the opportunity to speak to a breakfast club and to go with Mr. Ortega to the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. I'm telling you, I'm talking to anywhere there's a business because I need to better understand what those problems are. It doesn't mean that any one group gets to come in with carte blanche to tell us how to fix it, but they've got to be at the table to help us understand all the elements to fix it.
But a lot of these groups were born out of frustration,
yes,
or they have been personally victims of what's been going on.
Yeah.
And we know how hard it is to get people involved in local government, but they've actually created groups because they see this big issue. I get it. They're activists to a point, but they are worth listening to.
We've been talking with them a lot. If there were hard feelings, began last September at a meeting where they opened the doors and let people speak. And I think you're right, Dan, and the bottom line is people are extraordinarily frustrated. Mm-hmm. And when you go into that day was an opportunity for the very first time, really, for businesses and business owners to speak to elected and appointed officials. And boy, did we hear it. Not everyone participates in such civil discourse, as we've noted. And so that makes people want to hear it or not. And so I just, an advantage, and Bill and I knew each other back in the day, 100 years ago, I ran the public access television studios. And that, it's one of those things that teaches you that the answer to bad speech is more speech, not the abolition of speech. And so what we look at is, I want to listen to everybody in this, and they are part of that solution. And you're right. Some of the first times I met with the group, and I hear from a couple of the business owners, one gal with a heating air conditioning business who doesn't want to bring her kids to her place of business. And I grew up going with my dad to his office. And when you can't take your children there anymore because it's simply not safe, or for many of these folks, their ability to provide for their children or to leave an inheritance, really, for their children is the passage of that business, to either sell it or to give it to the next generation. And what's the value of it if it has been destroyed by people doing fentanyl in their front yard? And that's just something we can't have.
We haven't talked about constables. Get an update on that. We're about out of time, but what is the latest? Are still have some openings? How many constables do we have here?
We now have 9, and we just appointed the last vacancy. So we had cut that group down, but there are 9 constables. As of a couple weeks ago, they are all full.
Full alignment.
Yes, and the Bill Lakewright is the presiding constable. He's done an extraordinary job finishing up a manual, if you will, so that there's some standards amongst them between the 9. There seems to be collaboration, cooperation. We got them some vests and some of the utilities he needs, and he will be returning probably right at the beginning of the second quarter to talk to the board about the establishment of deputy constables. So
few people want to do that job, but it's pretty important, right?
Very important job.
They've got to process serving and all these things.
That's a big job.
Yep. Dan, what else did you have before I wrap it up real quickly?
Pima Animal Care Center, they've talked recently about potentially having to euthanize dogs. Would they ever take that step?
I hope not.
They started to. I mean, I think we're looking at it in that, what, Bill, the problem is,
I know,
when we began to change the facility, there was a 49% live release rate. So half the animals came in, didn't make it out alive. That's changed, you know, quite a bit. And it's just, we've been able to put it off. I'm stumbling because would they ever, I don't know. You know, our hope is not. We've done everything we can. But I'll tell you, at some point, we've said, I think they must. It's that greater good as well. If we get to that point where we are way over capacity, we just had instance of strep zoo out at animal care. We have to worry about the greatest good for all of the animals, and if never where we want to be, but it may be what saves the most if we have to.
Anything else, Dan?
If you could give us a quick update, you're still in touch with former administrator Chuck Huckleberry.
Doing fine. And actually, great. We had lunch, a little group of us, just before the holidays, and he was out and about. And I think, you know, right around Christmas time, I think of Fitz and some of the comedians who were doing an event. Mm-hmm. There was a big show, I think, at the Rialto. And Chuck was there, and there was an event in October, which was the anniversary of his accident. At which he was honored by the Greater Arizona Biking Association. So he's out and about.
Can you ever see him coming back and doing anything for the county, or would he even want to? Or maybe that's a question for him.
Good question for him. I think he's having as much fun as he can have being retired.
Okay. All right, Jan Lesher. Thank you, Jan. We'll try to get you back in a couple of months for an update. There's always an update. I could have you on every day, and there'd be probably more updates about Pima County. All right, Dan Shear sticks around. I've got a couple of quick things for Dan. We'll let Jan go, take a break, and be back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dan Scheer with me from the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Boy, time flies here on this Friday show. I wanted to carve out 5 minutes with you. Now it looks like I've got four. We talked a little bit about this whole annual homeless count. Very difficult to try to get that together. And I also wanted to bring up weights and measures. When you go to a store, can you be assured in our area that you're getting that what you paid for?
Well, the state says that you should be at least 98% assured. And so they go in and they inspect these places, which means they show up, they pull 30 items off the shelf, and they go pay for them, and then they compare the receipt. And it's supposed to be at 98%. If you don't match that, they'll come back later and re-inspect, and they'll let you know as a store manager where you fell, and then they'll come back and re-inspect. And it's on the re-inspections that they're finding fewer and fewer stores are correcting it. And so you have some that are rating as low as 40%, Bill, have 40% of the prices on the shelf match what you're paying.
Are you kidding?
And a lot of these are convenience stores, 40. But over the last couple, last year, in fact, there's a class action suit filed against Walmart over this. Earlier this month, against Dollar General, it's convenience stores. And then they'll start racking up fines. We have a Circle K in our area that has racked up fines over the past year of more than $16,000. So why is this happening? Why is the prices not matching? They'll say that it's hard to get staffing in. They're doing a whole lot more price changes than they used to. And just kind of, it's not a priority for some of them. So I would check my receipts if I were you. And the Department of Weights and Measures website is one of the best I have ever seen. They will tell you everything that goes on in these inspections. They'll show you the receipts, and it's basically a red flag of who to watch out for.
How many inspectors do they have? They must be shorthanded like everybody else.
Yeah, they are, and they just have a handful, actually, that run around. But I will tell you, that is a department that is completely committed to what they do. They really enjoy their work. And they also do gas pumps and lots of other things. So we followed them around, and we'll have a story coming out in the next week on this.
They see themselves as consumer
defenders, really. Yeah, and they do a great
job.
Well,
everybody's shorthanded these days, including your newspaper business with 30 papers. I bet there's always a for sale. Not a for sale, but a help wanted sign out at probably every one of those 30 papers.
Yeah, but waiting for the right person to come along
yeah.
for an editor position or whatever is worth it. Yeah. And so we plug the holes, and we'll get there.
Are you getting people out of college, or are you getting some retirees?
Good question, because I just spoke to a guy this morning who's more toward the end of his career than the beginning. And those are people who kind of were there in the heyday and understand that with all these changes, the job really hasn't changed. You just go out and get great stories. Mm-hmm. And they know what a great story looks like, where a lot of newspapers are closing, but some of them have turned into nothing but places where you just are rewriting press releases. And what value is that to a community if you're not digging in and to the real issues?
And community papers, though, that sector of a very troubled sector, the newspaper sector, have been really holding their own, haven't they?
Yeah, we're in pretty good shape, and we've talked about this, mm-hmm. where I walk into work and I know what my mission is.
Right.
I know exactly who, where I'm covering and who I'm covering and why I'm covering it, and I know what my mission is not. So we don't spread ourselves too thin and stick to local news, and people appreciate that.
All right, Dan Scheer, always a pleasure having you on the program. Keep up the good work with WIC Communications, which is an Arizona company, WIC Communications, based in Sierra Vista, where you can look for Dan's work at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Matt Russell's coming up with our Weekend Watch.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Time to stir it up. That is our theme music for a Weekend Watch, which has been a fixture of the Buckmaster Show since we launched the program the first week in January of 2011. Weekend Watch is presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They are ready to welcome you with open arms to their beautiful area of New Mexico, the southwest corner. Lots to do, outdoor activities, plus some great places like the Western New Mexico University Museum, where they have the world-famous collection of Mimbres pottery. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Before you do your three-hour approximately drive over to Silver City and get you planning for your trip, let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, who's been with us, I think, pretty much since day one of the Buckmaster Show, and that is award-winning Tucson publicist, dedicated foodie, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, and it's been a thrill to curate some exceptional culinary experiences for your listeners over these last 11 years. I take my job seriously, and I know that your listeners will benefit from my eating and drinking all the while.
Yes, there you go. And one fixture of Weekend Watch has been another opening of what turns out to be, in many cases, some really great eateries.
Absolutely. And another new restaurant has opened its doors this week. Bill, it's called Blue Front, and it's located on Congress Street in the space that for many years was 1055 Brewing Company. And they're bringing what they call fine American dining, playful craft cocktails, scratch-made pies, and irresistible shakes. Oh, my goodness, to downtown Tucson. So behind this concept is the group that brought us Penka. So we know how deeply they care about memorable dining experiences. So what stands out to me, it's got to be the buttermilk fried chicken sandwich with house-made pickles, a nice remoulade sauce. You can even choose to make it Nashville style for a serious kick of heat. That's just a tease. So get the rest of the story this weekend at Blue Front.
Blue Front. And again, where are they located, Matt?
So right on Congress Street where 1055 Brewing was, immediately next door to Batch.
Okay. So we have another opening and another fixture of Weekend Watch are festivals. Do we have any coming up?
Yeah. You better believe it. And as your listeners probably know by now, it is one of my favorite foodie events in the country. And it's tomorrow right here in Tucson at the Tucson Botanical Gardens from noon to 3 p.m. It's the Savor Food and Wine Festival featuring more than 50 of our region's finest chefs and wineries, breweries, distilleries, all serving up samples from these exceptional menus against the backdrop of what I think is a pretty spectacular setting. Plus, Bill, a portion of your ticket purchase will support not only the botanical gardens, but local First Arizona and the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance. So walk the grounds, sip and snack along the way, and take comfort in the fact that you're supporting local nonprofits. All the information and tickets are at saaca.org. That's S-A-A-C-A.org.
I know you enjoy a nice piece of meat.
I do, and I don't know about you, though, Bill, but the way butchers and master chefs cut meat to order comes out looking much better than what I try to do it myself at home. And local butcher Ben Forbes of Forbes Meat Company is going to really demystify the art of butchery at a whole beef butcher class on Sunday from noon to four. All students will enjoy some wine and a charcuterie experience during this interactive class, and everyone is going to take home a big box of beef just for attending. So the class is at Forbes Meat Company downtown. You must reserve a spot in advance, though. Number to call, 474-2714. Now, Bill, I'm curious, are you more of a ribeye guy, a New York strip guy, a filet mignon guy? Tell me.
There is one steak that will always do it for me. I enjoy a nice fillet. Usually, I kind of go on the moderate side. I can enjoy a 4 to 6 ounce fillet, and I like a little bit of red in that meat, but boy, that, and oh, needless to say, I love the piece of meat being very tender. Fillet guy.
Right. Well, you certainly, by no surprise, have gone right to the most luxurious cut of beef. So that matches the lifestyle and the travel and the adventure and the experiences you like as well. So no surprise, Bill.
And we want to welcome all our friends who are arriving in Tucson for It's Gem Show time again. And that means our eateries will be doing a very robust business.
It's wonderful news. The hardest working men and women in Southern Arizona, our local restaurant scene. It's going to be a great time out there enjoying this gem show that's on the international map, and we are happy to be hosting our friends from all over the world.
Have a great weekend, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by our German friend Christophan. Thanks to my assistant, Rose Brandt, everybody here at KVOI, including executive, he's the executive engineer and producer of the Buckmaster Show. Tom Fairbanks just gave you a great title there. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend.